Well, thank you very much for that very generous welcome, and it's great to be back in the North Coast, actually. I haven't been in Byron Bay since I stopped being director of the North Coast Institute, which is over 12 years ago. But I'd like to begin by paying my respects to the traditional owners of the land, elders past and present, and any Aboriginal people with us here today. As was said, I'm going to talk about really our development of the next National Workforce Development Strategy, which is a bit about economic resilience. But the thing that we're concentrating on, I suppose, in that plan is productivity and participation. And participation in the workforce is a really big issue for us. And we've got some clear issues about that in Australia, not least that participation by men of prime working age is actually falling. And we're good at analysing the problem, we're not so good at coming up with solutions. So part of my message today is that we're writing this strategy at the moment, and if you've got some good solutions, we'd be delighted to hear from you, because my board, which is fairly economic rationalist, I have to say, is very committed to increasing participation. And Barry would be pleased to know that we have included representatives from the Men's Shed movement on a number of our consultation rounds, because my board thinks that is one way of actually increasing workforce participation among these different groups. I'm afraid we've recently changed our name. Skills Australia is no longer, and we now have the wonderful title of the Australian Workforce and Productivity Agency. Governments like to change. We've still got our core business of providing advice about things like skill shortages, but we're also a funding body now in terms of the overall responsible for the National Workforce Development Fund. We've got the good and the great on our board, like captains of industry, two members of the Reserve Bank, but Mari Person, who is a member of our board, is a specialist in adult literacy. We've done a large number of reports, including reports on the vet sector, reports on things like resources. We operate mainly at the national level, and in terms of what we do, it's policy research. We set priorities for the National Workforce Development Fund, and we also do sectoral research, so we've done a lot of work on the mining industry. I've got lots of slides and lots of graphs, so it's a bit of like a poor man's Alan Kohler, but if anybody wants them, quite happy to send them to the organisers so that you needn't take photos of them or desperately try and scrabble and put them down. Why are skills important? Well, to a certain extent, I'm just going to provide you some evidence for something that you believe in and you probably know intuitively. One of our board members, Professor Gerald Burke, is actually doing some work with the Brotherhood of St Lawrence. And there's, you know, absolutely clear evidence that improvements in education and skills can lift the proportion of the population who are in employment. And obviously people in employment not only are economically better off, but they're also better off in terms of social and health issues. And, you know, this is good for the economy. Sorry to be economic rationalist, because we actually collect more tax and we pay less benefits. Now, I do realise that paid employment isn't the only objective in life, but it's something that we're concerned about and something that we've got a mission to actually try and improve. Now, my board has done a lot of work on what the payoff from participation is, and we're absolutely convinced that greater investment in education and training has a clear economic benefit. One of the things that we want to do is to increase workforce participation in Australia from 65 to 69%. Now, taking Barry's figures, maybe adult education is only 19% in terms of employment, but we're only looking for a 4% growth in workforce participation. If we achieve that, the economic case, I think, is indisputable. Even the Productivity Commission agrees with our figures that the bottom line increase in Australia's economic and financial bottom line would be $24 billion by 2025. Now, there's clearly some issues. I mean, I think the big issue that we've got outside the, in terms of the tertiary sector, outside universities, is the whole responsibility between states and commonwealths in terms of vet and adult education. And state governments tell us they haven't got any money. and that's partly because, you know, boring things like GST revenues and property taxes are falling, and that's why you're seeing the reductions in terms of funding to TAFE and other tertiary providers outside the university sector up and down the country. Now, that is a great concern to my board, and it's something that we need to address. Because if we don't invest, we don't get the payoff. So it's clearly something that we need to achieve. And if you just have a look, I've got a few slides here, in terms of the achievement in education and training, the higher level of qualification that you get, the lower your unemployment, the higher level of literacy that you've got, the lower level of unemployment you're going to suffer. And in terms of earnings, the higher level of qualification you've got, on average, the more you earn. So both at a national and an individual case, there's a strong economic argument for more education and training. However, one of the things that we're also concerned about in Australia is that getting more qualifications isn't just the answer. Because often we think, when we talk to people in industry, there's not only a skills gap, but there's also an experience gap. And you talk to people in the mining industry, and they say, we can't get geophysical engineers for love or money. So you say, well, how many did you interview the last time you attempted to recruit? And they often say seven. We had seven graduates, but only one had 5 years' experience. And we're only interested in the person with 5 years' experience. So again, one of the other issues that we're trying to address in our National Workforce Development Strategy is the whole question of novice workers in Australia, because increasingly it's a problem. And the other day I was talking to Health Workforce Australia, and it's not just an issue in the mining industry. They were telling me of certain healthcare providers who would rather import nurses with 5 years' experience from offshore than recruit nurses straight out of universities. Now, employers often tell us that they want job-ready graduates. We're going to throw the argument back to them. Are we going to have graduate-ready employers in Australia? And do we need to do things like more internships? And do we need to have more work-integrated learning? And frankly, do we need more of an apprenticeship model in higher education so we can bridge some of that experience gap? Because again, this is from a bulletin board for the mining industry. And you'll see that every job wants qualifications, but not one job requires less than 5 years' experience. So how do you actually address this? And this is one of the things that we're looking to address in our next National Workforce Development Strategy. The other thing is, clearly, more skills and more qualifications are good for participation, and they're good for productivity. But part of the issue is that productivity, which is far more disputed than people will be prepared to admit, is often measured by increases in wages. So if you look at the terms of the payoff of productivity and participation, the blue is the payoff in terms of participation, the red is the payoff in terms of productivity. And what you will see, any level of qualification gives you a payoff in terms of productivity, in terms of participation. So any level of qualification gives you a payoff in terms of participation. But you'll see, because the higher the qualification, the more you earn, the productivity payoff is more skewed to the higher level. Now, the issue is that all these are averages. And in fact, if you do a Certificate 3 or a Certificate 4 in a traditional male trade occupation, your payoff is probably as good as doing a bachelor's degree. And it highlights an issue we've got, is we've got a really gender-segregated labour market in Australia. Because traditional female occupations at Certificate 3 and Certificate 4 level will help you get a job, help you keep a job, but they won't necessarily give you a huge increase in earning. And what we're really talking about is the difference between an electrician and a childcare worker or a hairdresser. And again, it's an issue that I think as a community we need to do some more work about. But again, also in terms of how we're going in Australia, we've got a growth in terms of, you know, which sector is providing training for different jobs. And you can see that professions are dominated by universities. As you could expect, trades are dominated by vet, which is the red. But also, we've got a whole swag of occupations here where the majority of people haven't got skills and qualifications, and there is a great opportunity for us all who are involved in post-compulsory education. But our economy is shifting and our economy is changing, and there's a fastest growth in occupations with qualifications. And that's one of the themes I'll keep on returning to. In terms of how our occupations are going, over this period here, which is a longer term, you actually see that the growth in occupations is often in the service sector. You've got healthcare and social assistance. Okay, you've got construction, but professional and technical services and education and training. But I suppose that just shows down the bottom where the growth isn't happening, which reflects some of the issues that we've got with manufacturing. If you take a shorter term trend, and this shows the importance of the mining industry, even though mining is only 2% of employment in Australia, you'll see over this period here, from 2009 to 2012, you'll see it had a huge growth. And again, we've still got manufacturing down the bottom, which obviously reflects the current economic conditions. But what about the challenges we face? Because in terms of working on the next workforce development strategy, we have to look at the current environment. The other day, in fact last week, we ran our own conference in Orpah on the future of work. I think two of the big themes that came out, which we all know about, is the impact of technology and the impact of globalisation. And if I could pick one slide from our conference that summed it up, it's probably this. Now this is a slide from an organisation called thefreelancer.com. And the Freelancer is an organisation where you can go onto their website and source work, like design work or legal work, or things that you can attach to an email from around the world. And it demonstrates very clearly that a lot of the work is being specified in the West, but it's being sourced from the East. And it's a very global market. Now, when I've shown this slide to other people, they've said, oh, how terrible, you know, we're undermining Australian workers' jobs. And somebody was saying that to me and then suddenly stopped halfway through the sentence because they then said, well, I suppose I do buy most of my books from Amazon, but not Amazon in Australia. So it is a very, you know, global market. And one of our other speakers was Professor Hugh Lauder from the University of Bath, who pointed out that the output of Indian, Chinese and Russian universities was greater than North America and Europe combined, and they're both people in those new countries are doing far more science, technology, engineering and maths than what we're doing. And the notion that all the high paid jobs are going to be in the West and all the low paid jobs are going to be in the East is becoming a bit of a myth, because though 5 years ago BMW said we can produce a car in China, but we can't design it there, they're now all being designed in Mumbai. So, you know, it is a very global world, and that's going to have a big impact in terms of workforce development and the economy in Australia. The other issue, and our Minister, Senator Evans, was, you know, on the TV about this the other day, you've probably all heard about MOOCs, Mass Online Open Courseware, and, you know, this is just an example of them. I mean, I think they're a bit clunky at the moment, but they're certainly something that we need to accommodate, and it's all part of the changing environment in which we operate. However, we are very lucky in Australia in terms of when we're working out our national workforce development strategy, that economically we're doing quite well compared to many other countries, which gives us an advantage. The reason why we're doing that quite well is because China and India are industrialising. But to a certain extent, we're really going back to where we were 500 years ago. This is a slide which shows world output from 1500 to 2030. And I think the maybe the key's dropped off, actually, in terms of that. But what it is that the blue is China and the blue is India, and the green is like more Western countries. And what it shows, before the European settlement of Australia and America, before the Industrial Revolution, world output was dominated by India and China. So all that's happening is that we're going back to that situation, that world output will again be dominated by India and China as we move into the next century. Now for Australia, that's good for us economically because they've got an insatiable desire at the moment for our natural resources.